All right, welcome everyone to The Onion. This is a podcast by Codebase. You may be used to hearing Stephen Drost's voice, our Chief Strategy Officer, but the way we designed The Onion was always to have multiple hosts. That's when I come in. My name is Guillermo, Head of Online Community at Codebase. And we are keeping the same question as usual. That's how we've designed it. And today I'm joined by Chris Hughes, founder of Dispendio. Welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Annie. It's nice to be on the pod.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time today. I think we're going to get started straight away. What's your background, Chris?
My background is business, really. So I think, like a lot of CEOs, you're kind of thrown into a lot of different aspects of the job. But I guess I'm most comfortable in a kind of more sales and marketing side. I started the business when I was at university, so I'm a bit of an all-rounder, really.
Ooh. Makes sense. And you mentioned start at university. What actually made you build a startup?
Yeah, so I was a student with dyslexia, and I had to give presentations a lot in my degree, and it was one of my biggest challenges. And effectively, there's a lot of great support and funding available for disabled students. So I went in and met with the university, discussed what support was available, and effectively found that a lot of people had similar challenges to me, but nothing was being done in that problem space. So after learning that, you know, there was millions of other neurodivergent people struggling with the same challenges that I had with no solution, I really decided that I wanted to do something for myself. And it was more of a kind of fun project, being kind of 2 weeks into my, or a couple of months into my kind of undergrad degree, but just always something I've been super passionate about is metacognition, understanding my own kind of how my brain works, and being neurodivergent is just something I'm really passionate about and really own. So it just kind of came naturally.
No, that's cool. You mentioned it was a couple of months to your undergrad. How many years has it been now?
Coming up for 10 years.
So what's your startup called?
Dispendio.
And what's the pitch?
So our mission is to make inclusion the standard, you know, not the kind of afterthought that a lot of people kind of have when it comes to supporting neurodivergent people. There are over a billion disabled people in the world, and a lot of that is a real kind of underrepresented community, especially when you look at how many people are undisclosing disabilities in the workplace and in education. So our mission is to support the billion people with disabilities across the world, really.
My next question sort of already touched on it as well, but how does your startup change the world?
Yeah.
Isn't that actually those billion people that you're able to potentially support? And support, you mentioned sort of institutions, or could be the workplace as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So our first product is a tool called ProjectPal. It's a presentation support software that aims to help presenters overcome challenges with working memory. So it's a real kind of common challenge that a lot of neurodivergent people have is working memory and processing challenges, and that's really elevated when you are giving presentations, especially on content that you haven't really had a chance to learn. So really where we're focusing is universities, so higher education and the workplace. So to date, we are supporting students and professionals in over 150 institutions across the UK and US, which is something we're really passionate about. And we've been working really hard in the last year on how we can continue to support an even wider audience.
That's great. That's really good to hear as well. Again, I think you sort of touched on it as well. You're clearly passionate about what you do. But what excites you the most about the space that you're in? Is that potential impact?
Absolutely. At the moment, I'm super fascinated with AI. I think in the accessibility space, there's just so much massive room to make, you know, real societal impact. If you look at a lot of challenges that a neurodivergent person has, the kind of opportunities to solve so many problems with AI can be life-changing for a lot of people.
No, definitely. Yeah, definitely lots of things happening around AI as well, and
Yeah,
using
totally.
that tech to make people's lives easier is
Yeah,
actually quite
absolutely.
powerful as well.
Absolutely.
Again, you've touched on it, but I'd be curious to see how big is your sort of total available market out there. You've mentioned billion, is that sort of
Yeah.
global, world as well? Is that something you're more focused on at the moment,
Yeah.
size as well? And kind of what is the speedest for the future of the space that you're building it? What would it look like?
Absolutely. We've done quite a lot of work looking at our TAM, SAM, and so on. Obviously, the wider total addressable market is over 1 billion people that we're trying to support. Obviously, at the moment, we are only supporting people with presentations, but that's something that we are really looking at how we can really try and solve some of the wider societal challenges that neurodivergent person has. So, in terms of our total addressable market, it's really kind of wide. A challenge that I think a lot of people have with accessibility is our accessibility products, and it's not accessible in pricing. So, if you talk about the 1 billion people with disabilities, how many people can actually get access to support? So, it narrows down quite a fair bit where there's a lot of government grants and support for assistive technology and things like that, but not everyone can access that. So it's a wider challenge there in terms of looking at how we can help people who can't access grants and support access the tools that they need.
Interesting, yeah. Is that something that you also really quite exciting in the space you're in is maybe the way AI and technology could enable that accessibility again and make
Yeah,
it more widely accessible to
absolutely.
people? Yeah.
Absolutely.
So back on that, who is your ideal customer? What
Yeah.
is this 1 billion people that will be staying? Like, do you have an ideal one in this 1 billion as well to look at?
Not necessarily. So at the moment, we're really kind of focused hard on students and universities has been our big kind of focus, but I guess where I'm really fascinated in at the moment is the knowledge worker space. I reference those 1 billion people with disabilities, but there's actually 20%, 1 in 5% of the population, or 1 in 5, should I say, of the population have a disability. So it's a massive, massive kind of percent of us. Effectively, in the workplace, roughly only about 4% of people disclose their disabilities. So if you can imagine, you've then got 16% of people who are masking. So it's a really interesting concept looking at how we can support that additional 16%, because that 16% are people who are doing their job, and they're probably doing a good job, but they're having to overcome additional challenges that hopefully we can provide extra support, which can allow them to really enhance their own career opportunities and really excel, I guess.
No, that makes a lot of sense as well. But you mentioned if you primarily work with institutions, you're not directly B2C, so your ideal customers are still just kind of existing people in place. Do you see that changing, or do you see that on the way to that wider impact to go direct to consumer, or do you think where do you see
Yeah,
that
possibly direct to
happening?
consumer. Longer term, I think a B2B play is probably what's coming up next for us. Yeah, as I've said, we're really excited about looking at how we can widen our offerings in terms of supporting a much wider group. So I'd say we'll have more to share on that soon, but we should have some really exciting news coming in the next kind of couple of months on how we can do that.
Yeah, sounds yeah, really exciting. So you've mentioned Present Pal, your existing product as well. With Present Pal, do you think you have product market fit at the moment?
Definitely in our core group. I think from our perspective is we're very kind of data obsessed, so we're really kind of very metric driven. So in our core markets of higher education and the kind of neurodivergent student space, I would say we definitely do that.
Yeah. Awesome. You're a solo founder, aren't you? So that makes sense. You run a team. How many people do you
We have 19.
19. Yeah, that's really cool. And if I ask you to project yourself 5 years from now, maybe 2029, where do you see yourself? How many people are working for your startup? What kind of turnover are you aiming for? Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Like our mission is to be a world leading or the world leading accessibility company. So that really is kind of where we want to go is really trying to support as many people as we can. In terms of employee headcount, I have next to no idea in terms of how that could look at the moment. We've got really aggressive plans to continue to grow. Like in the last few years, we've seen really strong growth. Like from the most part, the business is relatively bootstrapped. We've had two profitable years where we've seen really strong growth. So we're supporting our full team on our cash flow. So we're a really kind of self-sufficient business. The plan is either to continue to do that or to look at avenues where we can really expand and accelerate. But yeah, we want to have a suite of products that are really making societal impact is the goal.
Yeah, no, I love that. Yeah, I love the idea that 5 years from now you might have all these products, and not just a one. So it'd be, yeah, really exciting thing to think about. I've got one last question kind of around market and what you're building at the moment. What are the bottlenecks for growth for you at the moment? What's stopping you from growing?
Cool.
Like a, yeah, just
Oh,
like a speed
exciting.
about it as well.
Yeah.
Because it was interesting hearing you talk about you being profitable, being able to make payroll every month.
Yeah.
I know founders that sometimes keep that up at night sometimes how they're going to make payroll. So it's always seen as quite that achievement and that kind of being comfortable on that. But yes, what's stopping you from the next steps at the moment? Is it funding? Is it market? Is it time? Is it resources? Is it talent? Is it, yeah, I mean, you clearly have the vision wanting to use that word leading stability kind of company. So what's in the
Yeah, so as I said, we'll have some pretty big news coming in the next couple of months, I guess. Well, my focus has been in the last year or so is really getting the plans ready for this big announcement coming soon. I guess what we've been trying to do within that is really define the ICP for a much wider offering, I guess. So really, that's been my focus on this trip, actually. We're recording this in San Francisco just now,
We are indeed.
which is really cool. And effectively, what I've been doing in the last, the last couple of months is really trying to focus in on route to market, ICP, on this news of what's coming soon.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I think we can't talk a lot about it just now as well, but we'd love that. Yeah, so it teaches us on the learning
For
and see
sure.
how it works. I'm also curious to know because obviously there's in kind of the accessibility sector, it is a stigma as well when you approach people or companies that you want to work with. You might think that maybe something more that charity should do, maybe not a business should be focused on. Have you had any pushback around the sort of
Yeah,
things as well?
absolutely. I mean, I think within the accessibility space, a lot of people consider it as a nice to have. It's a box tick. We're meeting legislation and things like that. But I think what we're trying to do in the next, certainly in the next 6 months, a big focus for us is how we can improve return on investment of investing in supporting neurodivergent people to companies. As I said, you've got 1 in 5 people are neurodivergent. You've got 17% of a team are masking, so they haven't disclosed. So if you can actually address that, then you could potentially have 17% of your talent or your workforce being a hell of a lot more productive. So that's a measurable ROI that we could hopefully try and provide to a business which takes neurodiversity and accessibility from and nice to have, kind of softer, kind of EMPS kind of metric to hopefully a productivity metric, time saved or time gained. It's really what we're trying to drive.
No, well, it makes a lot of sense. I remember reading a lot of things about, where are your next million customers? And we're just looking at the tech market from lots of diversity, whatever that means. And I think neurodiversity is definitely one. And it's for me a good balance of the ethical side, but also the financial side. And making that one talk forward
Totally.
to make progress happen. No, that's great. Thank you, Chris. Got a few more
Yeah,
questions as
brilliant.
well. This time a bit more about sort of Southern culture. What's your favorite thing about Southern culture? I guess you've been in it since university as well. So, what's your favorite thing?
So it's actually one of our core values, but it's adaptability. It's being able to be in a lot of kind of first time experiences where you are very much learning on the job. You're learning as you go. And so I think for me, there's been an incredible kind of learning curve. And even for my team, for example, like being able to see some individuals who joined us about 3 or 4 years ago straight out of university, who have they were very, very much potential but no real kind of experience. And they've gone from being the kind of like the juniors in the team to actually being seniors and into that kind of mid-management side now, which is really cool to see. And that's just based on the attitude of being able to tackle things for the first time with no experience or background and solving it. And it's fantastic to be able to be in a team where you can pivot really quickly based on any changes in the market or any kind of opportunities that are changing. So I love the whole adaptability side and just being able to be uncomfortable all the time.
Yeah, going
So
comfortable is not being comfortable. So
exactly.
yeah, no, that's very true.
Sure.
That's brilliant. I love that you celebrate your team and you're able to kind of support as well people going through it. When you look back on kind of those first hires that you made, maybe was it a bit more of a gamble? How were you able to maybe identify that those people will be kind of the right adaptable people for you, that you'll be able to support their growth or support the growth of your business as well?
Yeah, on first hires, my first two hires were initially kind of interns straight out of university. They both super high potential, but just for me, like I was also effectively like 22, 23, so there's so much learning and so many mistakes made there, which was actually quite good because I definitely made mistakes in terms of when I was managing them, and effectively both of them it didn't really work kind of longer term in terms of like lack of experience, and we're all just I think it was a bit too raw at that point. But
That
kind of
happens.
shortly after, I was able to bring in two individuals who are almost like co-founders to me. So my chief marketing officer now, Cara, she has kind of been through the very start of the scaling journey with Turtle Travel through
Oh,
Glasgow. So
Chris,
she was one of their first employees, grew with them to 30. And then my ex chief product officer, Ewan, had his own startup as well. So we met at Scottish Edge and just, I think, just got really pally. So the two of them were both extremely entrepreneurial. They were very scrappy, which is really what you need in your first, your first 5 to 10 hires, is really scrappy people who are very adaptable, and it just really clicked. So I think what I had with the two of them was just a really perfect, it was a perfect storm, I guess. Yeah, lot of really complementary skill sets that really allowed us to kick on.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I always love hearing stories about kind of early stages as well, and like looking back on it. So thank you for sharing that. On to the next one. What is your least favorite thing about Southern culture as well?
So at the moment, I'm a big bit of a rat for this, but we are pretty much remote now, which I struggle with personally. We went through a pretty significant hiring kind of hiring period, I guess, during 2021. So it was really kind of peak lockdown. We went from like 4 to about 11 people in the space of like
A month.
yeah, pretty much. And so a lot of the people that we hired during that phase was I tried to bring in experienced people. And so what we brought in at that point was a kind of change in dynamic of the people that we were hiring. So it was less kind of scrappy, less experienced people. And I guess we were then kind of hiring people with like 10 years experience upwards, and a lot of them were kind of younger parents. And for them, like they loved the vision and the tech for good side of what we do, but we also were able to offer a lot of flexibility and perks on flexible working. So for young parents, remote working, or certainly with my team, the flexibility with remote working is extremely kind of, that's a massive advantage.
For
And
sure.
so, personally, I don't enjoy remote working. I feel like I'd love to have a busy office with that whole kind of like cliche startup culture. And we don't really have that. Our culture is still great. It's we've got a really good culture. We spend a lot of time on our culture, but I guess personally, selfishly, I would love to have a busy office.
That's fair enough. I can sort of relate to that as well. I love the ability to work in hybrid. But I think especially now we see even more corporates coming back to the office. I think some startups as well I've seen are 100% office based and claim it as part of the culture as well, and without any kind of shame around it. I think so it's quite interesting to see that. And then do you think that remote culture is stopping you from growing?
No, I don't think so. It certainly impacts my personal enjoyment of it a little bit, I think. But I guess we're able to get talent that I wouldn't be able to access if I forced everyone into the office, for example. Like it's working really well. So like I think that's the point, is we made these hires during COVID, and then it worked extremely well. So I know a lot of companies are kind of mandating that you need to come back in, but if it's not broke, then why fix it? And also I think it would really turn a lot of people off. And we would probably lose some of the people that we tried really hard to bring in. So
That makes a lot of sense. I guess as a founder, you need to make that compromise between sort of what your team needs, what you need, what the
yeah,
business needs as
totally.
well, and that has probably changed over time as your team has grown. And is it all people based all in the UK now,
Yeah,
more international?
yeah. So, yeah, hardly in any of the hubs, to be honest. We've got a handful of people in Edinburgh, but people are pretty spaced out, and for them, it really works. And yeah, I really value our team, and I don't think changing up for my own kind of enjoyment would be for the best interest.
No, I respect that. Thank you for sharing that. You've already shared lots of little nuggets of knowledge along the way, but do you have any sort of secrets or little bits of advice for the founders out there?
I think things always take longer than you think. So this is me coming up for 10 years. The first 5 years were far longer than they should have been. I think I can try and argue I was 18, 19 in the early years. But really, when I got the right team around me, that's really when things kind of kicked off. I think you just need to be scrappy. I've been on every campus in the UK, for example. So I have literally been everywhere. We've got a go-to-market team of 5 or 6 people now, but I've literally walked every single step of the way that they have. So I can really understand our customers, our users. I think it's being able to just have an attitude where, things need to get done, but, you also need to be, hungry to learn and understand the best way to do things. Like I've always had like an excellent mentor, I would say something that's been really kind of critical based on the stage of the business. So you've always got someone who you can lean on. But for the most part, it's you need to be hungry to learn and get your sleeve rolled up. And another thing that we've done in the last year is we've really embraced this fail fast mentality. So obviously we're out here in the Bay Area just now, and that's just like such a common theme. But I feel like we've invested a lot into projects that we probably should have called earlier. And that's something that we were doing up until about 18 months ago. It was actually a trip out here where I really learned. Just the pace that people work, you set a whole series of, assumptions or, and then you actually go and test it. And effectively, we've been able to make a lot quicker decisions based on the fact that we can set a series of goals. And basically, like, I create frameworks for quite a lot of big decisions beforehand. So you've got a time frame, you've got you've got yeah, I love a framework where you have to have like a confidence score of 7 or above or you're killing the project, basically.
Interesting.
So we did that last year, and it was one of the kind of new products that we were looking at was an AI presentation builder. This was in January last year. So we're really cutting edge. No one was talking about AI. Obviously, ChatGPT came out in December 2022. And basically, January 2023, we were like, wow, we can use AI to create presentations, because obviously that was one of the angles that we are supporting as presentations to now. Got really, really excited. We kind of broke out into cross-functional teams where I pulled maybe three or four individuals into a kind of task force team. We got to a stage where we built a prototype, proven market traction, and had validated the need within about 6 weeks. Which was really, really exciting. But effectively, at the start of it, I'd created this framework called the Burn Bridge for us. So six kind of key metrics that we had to have a confidence score of 1 to 10 on. So like the need, the budget and commercials, the actual total addressable market, all of these kind of good metrics were things that we were measuring. But effectively it was eight or nine for five of them, and then one final metric was competitive landscape, which was two out of ten. So the team were super excited about this project, boards, the investors, everyone was loving it, but effectively the competitive landscape was going to kill the project. So we killed it after 9 weeks, which was a really bold move, but really kind of allowed us to find our new focus and brought us really back to the purpose, which is accessibility, and allowed us to kind of focus in on what we've been working really hard on for the last year.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I think everything you said, and you're talking to customers, fail fast mentality, and the idea of the framework as well, are all criteria, because they all have the same weight, are they?
Well, yeah, at the moment it is balanced equally, but to your point, I think if you're really going to get scientific, probably not. I mean, like, I think, a lot of it is just a bit like gut, but what it really allowed us to do was focus in on ensuring we're ticking all these boxes. Effectively, like, what the goal is was like, it's a framework to try and create like a really high growth product, effectively, was what we're trying to do. And it just gave you the focus, or gave us the focus in terms of what we had to establish and understand before we kind of kicked off on that. So it gave us real kind of laser focus there. So I'm a big fan of a framework.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I like the idea of like task force as well that you put together, sort of trying to
Love
pull
it,
people
yeah.
from time as well. That's yeah, quite interesting. And on the Delphi mentality, I think we could be here talking about 4 hours. I think, as I said, we're in San Francisco right now, and it's one of my favorite topics with most people. It's has how much it's a long topic here. It's just yeah, it's
Yeah.
very, very interesting. And the way that failure is seen and more normalized is definitely something that we can learn from. I think that iteration is also at the heart of entrepreneurship, isn't it? You know, keep
Totally.
getting better. And the more you do it, the smaller cycles, so better things will be. And you first hand experienced it in the way that you got the products in the last year as well.
Totally. Totally.
All right. Thank you so much for that. So many great things in there. Any kind of last thing that you would like to share with listeners as well? I know you mentioned where Winston is going to come out here a bunch of times before as well. That's something you recommend founders to do.
Highly, highly recommend.
Yeah.
I think coming out here and just being able to listen and meet other founders is very eye-opening. I think yeah, every time I come out here, I just there's just such an infectious kind of drive, I guess, and ambition. So I think you need to take a little bit of a pinch of salt as well, because I think my team hate when I come out here, because there's usually some really wild ideas that come back, but then there's also some nuggets in there too.
Yeah, no, it's like everything. You've got those frameworks in place as well. Now you build that from team selling, that culture where people can give feedback as well. So that's where you can bring back this good thing and let them cook and
Yeah,
experience those
exactly.
things as well.
Exactly.
All right, well, thank you so much, Chris. It was great to hear more about spending time with you. Appreciate it. Thank you, everyone,
Been
for
great to be here.
listening in.